you like beautiful things? Of course you do. Whether we're talking about fine art, well-made products, or the natural world, we are effortlessly drawn to objects with aesthetic appeal. But there's a dark side to our love of beauty, according to Katie Kelleher, author of the new book, The Ugly History of Beautiful Things, Essays on Desire and Consumption. Katie is an art, design, nature, and science writer whose work has appeared in the Paris Review, the New York Times, and the Guardian. Her essays have been anthologized in both Best American Food Writing and Best American Science and Nature Writing, and she joins us now to share five of her big ideas.
Hello, my name is Katie Kelleher, and I'm the author of the forthcoming book, The Ugly History of Beautiful Things. I'm going to share with you today five ideas that I'd like you to consider. First, let's start by getting on the same page and acknowledging that beauty is serious. It's not a silly interest, nor is it a woman's interest, nor a special preoccupation. Beauty is life-affirming, and beauty is sacred. There have been times throughout my life when living felt too difficult to continue. Once, as a teenager, I attempted suicide with a bottle of prescription pills because I couldn't imagine a life without pain. I hadn't yet come to accept that suffering was inevitable, but so was love, lightness, and joy. It took me years and many hundreds of hours of therapy to see that my life was unremarkable, as was my pain. It also took me years to understand that I have a reason to keep getting up and leaving my bed. I was looking for moments of beauty. I went through each day waiting to see something worthwhile, a glimpse of the indigo Catskills over the Hudson, a flash of a butterfly wing, a piece of artwork so finely made and ancient that made me stop and stare, marveling that human hands did this, that human genius could produce such lasting artifacts. I'm now in my mid-30s, and I feel as though I can finally understand what can replace God for us lapsed Catholics. Of course, there's a lot of different options, but I've decided to choose beauty. We can love beauty, and that is enough. That brings me to my second point. Like religion and faith, beauty is cultural. Beauty is malleable. Desire can be changed and shifted. Appreciation can be learned, sharpened, and widened. Let's take an example from my book. Have you ever seen a diamond? It's a stone, obviously, a clear one that's very popular in jewelry. It's also a chemical marvel, one of the strongest materials on Earth, thanks to its tetrahedral structure. As light passes through these hunks of pure carbon, it gets bent and scattered, resulting in that famous coveted sparkle. Sometimes diamond dealers call this fire, but just as often you'll hear it referred to as dispersion. But this quality, attractive though it is, isn't why diamonds are worth so much money. Both beauty and strength are part of the equation, but there are so many factors in play, the most important of which is perceived value. Economist Adam Smith once wrote of the diamond water paradox. To paraphrase, this is the idea that diamonds are useless, yet worth quite a lot, while water is necessary, yet worth next to nothing. This isn't meant to be a gotcha, because I do see the beauty in a diamond, but I can also see beauty in ice, rigid and cold, reflecting winter's light and turning blue in the dusk. There's beauty to be found in lesser valued stones, from quartz to turquoise to topaz to malachite. Stones have beauty, I won't deny that, but we don't have to follow predetermined lines of desire or consumption. We're capable of appreciating and wanting beauty that exists outside our immediate cultural sphere. Once upon a time, women didn't even wear diamond rings. European princesses wanted color, rubies, emeralds, and yes, soft, strange, sky-toned turquoise. The impulse wasn't to buy a stone that would last forever, but one that would signal their commitment and showcase their good taste. While beauty is a part of fashion, fashion also shapes beauty. No trend ever lasts forever. Point number three. Both desire and beauty are intensified by the shadow of death, the reminder of darkness. Take perfume, for instance. Most people have opinions and preferences about smell that seem, to them, to be inherent, or at least logical, perhaps even influenced by evolution. And some of them may be, but perfume is an art form that can upend what we know about desire and repulsion. For a long time, I assumed that it was in our nature to dislike certain scents, like the smell of rotting corpses or human feces. Disgust serves an evolutionary purpose, right? Well, it's more complicated than that. Jasmine, one of the most prized scents in perfumery, contains a compound that can also be found in decomposing bodies and toilet bowls. It's part of the bouquet, part of the aroma of jasmine. Yet when we smell a jasmine-heavy perfume, we often think of it as sexy, erotic, warm, even clean. Our brain registers the familiar foul smell, but it also registers the rest of the scent, the prettiness and the sweetness. I own many, many perfumes, and one of my favorites is called Jasmine and Cigarettes. Well, it's called that in French, but my accent is poor, so I translated it for you. For some reviewers, Jasmine and Cigarettes is unbearable, supposedly smelling like ashtrays and bar bathrooms. For me, it smells intoxicating. It's not just jasmine or tobacco that can elicit those polarizing responses. Musks are also strangely compelling. Traditionally made from the anal glands of animals, we now wear synthetic versions of musk almost every day. It's in most laundry detergents. Synthetic musks are in most laundry detergents and most soaps. Studies have shown that the average consumer reads white musk as clean or even soapy. It's amazing how much our noses know and how little it wants. But that's part of the beauty. It's complicated and strange. And beauty is so often more than the sum of its parts. This brings me to my fourth point. Beauty is dark, damaging, and dangerous. Throughout history, our lust for beautiful objects and our desire to own, control, and possess has caused so much hurt. Mining scars and pits the surface of the earth. Silkworm farming involves boiling millions of tiny creatures alive. Creating lab-grown gemstones takes a good deal of fossil fuel energy. Our appetite for fast fashion and the global demand for cheap clothing has caused many Americans to turn a blind eye towards slavery and abuse that happens abroad. Human rights violations happen closer to home, too. Engineered stone countertops are becoming more popular, yet in the making of these slabs, workers become choked with silica dust. Their lungs get scarred by the white powder, and they die untimely deaths. You can find examples of people dying for beauty in every corner of the globe and in every chapter of history. Some of them choose their fate, while others are forced into it. But fortunately, this takes me to my last point. Number 5. The world doesn't have to work this way. Beauty doesn't need to be so hard won or fraught. You don't have to be plagued with guilt. Those of us who love beauty have options. We have different ways of living available to us. And you don't have to deny what you find beautiful. And you don't have to retrain yourself to find new things beautiful, though this can happen, and it can be a really wonderful thing. It's always really great to expand our possibilities of pleasure. But beautiful things don't need to be accumulated or owned. If you start to view beauty as an action, as a moment, a thing that happens between person and object, then you can also view beauty as an event worth seeking out. This gives you some more power and control. You can create beauty. You can recreate it. Ownership is less important. People visit museums, cemeteries, gardens, and parks for many different reasons. Beauty is just one of them. But it's worth remembering that we're incredibly lucky to have access to public spaces where beauty exists. It's no accident either. These are some of America's best public projects designed to raise the quality of life for all people. It's worth remembering that our civic duty to one another isn't all drudgery and sacrifice. Sometimes it's about sharing beauty and experiencing it together.
Thank you, Katie. That was 5 big ideas from The Ugly History of Beautiful Things, Essays on Desires and Consumption by Katie Kelleher. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.